Hi there, Mr. Pinbacker, is that right?
Yes, that's right, Admiral Pinbacker.
Of course, sorry, Admiral. Yeah. We are looking for a captain for this new project called Icarus One, and we think you might be a good fit. Do you know much about the project?
I have heard broad strokes. I know that our sun is dying and that you want to send somebody to go reignite the sun, and I just want to say that I am fully prepared, and I would love to do it. My entire Pinbacker family has my support. They've been pilots and researchers, and I'm very excited to go.
Cool. Well, we just want to make sure that you know, will have the right criteria for being on this very dangerous trip. I mean, what do you think about the danger of your life? You might not make it back, and we want to see if you and your family are prepared for that.
As a Pinbacker, I can tell you I am fully prepared to die for this. The needs of the many outweigh the needs of the few, and especially the needs of the one, to quote Spock. And I really think that my sacrifice will be worth it, and plus I'll hopefully get to spend eternity with the sun, our overlord.
Yeah, well, I mean, hopefully not.
Sure. Ideally, I come back, of course, with the crew intact. But I'm just saying, worst case scenario, if I'm hanging out with the sun for the rest of my life, then I'll be at peace.
When you say hanging out with the sun, I mean, in reality, you might be on a ship by yourself for decades.
Yeah, that would be fine, too. I think as long as I have the sun's presence near me, then I'll be in a state of peace and of joy. And you know, we're all supposed to go to heaven at some point, so if I have to go early or if the rest of the crew does, then that's fine.
What is your relationship with the sun? I feel like you have an interesting take on things.
Well, the sun is the epicenter of life. It's the whole reason that we're all here and alive. I think of it as my father and my mother and the Holy Spirit. I think those who don't hail the sun are incredibly wrong, and they will burn in the afterlife.
You seem perfect.
Great. Bad science. Did the movie get it right? Bad science. Or will we have to fight?
Hi, everybody. Welcome to another episode of Bad Science. I'm Ethan Edinburgh, and today I'm joined by two absolutely lovely guests to talk about Danny Boyle's 2007 film Sunshine. First, I'll introduce them, of course, a wonderful stand-up comedian and writer and good friend of mine, I would say, Brad Solnitzer.
Yeah, pretty good. I mean, we're friends.
I mean, pretty good friends?
The qualifier. We're fine. Would you ask me for a ride to the airport?
No.
Yeah,
so I would feel rude about that.
We're friends.
Yeah, just friends.
Good friends.
Good friends.
Drive friends to the airport.
Yeah, or like if I see you somewhere and I don't really know anybody else, then it's like, oh, we're really good friends.
No, then
friends
we're best
now.
Friends
yes.
In the moment. Right. Like it's all, yeah, it's all relative.
Yeah, all
like
relative.
We're best friends at a party where both of us don't know anyone else.
Yes, and speaking of relativity, we have here a scientist, a systems engineer at the Jet Propulsion Laboratory, Babak Ferdowsi.
Ferdowsi, that's right. Yeah.
I did say
yeah,
it.
Yeah,
right.
You did. You got
oh,
it.
Okay, Ferdowsi. See, once I get the doubt in my head, it's like it's nonstop, you know.
Right. No, I'm on the record as Bobby Ferdowsi, and while I work at JPL or NASA's Jet Propulsion Laboratory, I'm not representing their opinions about Danny Boyle's Sunshine.
Ah,
this is just my own.
This is just your personal opinions.
That's
not
right.
The opinions of the government.
Not the official. There.
I'm
representing the NASA
Fantastic.
Jet Propulsion Laboratory's
okay, good.
Opinions on Sunshine.
I mean, that's why I brought Bob back in. So
yeah,
I'm glad that somebody's here doing it. Well, what's your personal take on Sunshine?
I loved it. I mean, this is maybe the third time I watched it in preparation for this, and I enjoyed it. And I was thinking, like, there's a pretty good cast in here. You've got Danny Boyle as a great director. Why didn't this movie
make a bigger splash?
Yeah, make a bigger splash. I was talking to people, and people were like, I've never heard of that movie.
I know. It's crazy.
Because it was in between 28 Days Later, his smash hit,
right,
and Slumdog Millionaire, his other smash hit.
Yeah, but why wouldn't... That would prove to me, like, more people would see it.
No, I know. I ran out to see this because I love 28 Days Later so much.
And what did you think? You ran out sort of implies that like maybe you were let down.
I was excited.
Okay, but no,
I
meant like
no, I
after
didn't run
you
out of the theater.
I
ran out of the theater in anger because all the science was wrong. And that's NASA's official opinion.
Okay, I'll see you next time. I thought it was good too. I had a great time watching this movie. I hadn't seen it probably since then or I don't know, around then, but this was my second time watching it, but I greatly enjoyed it. I had a few issues which I'm sure we'll get into, but in general, I thought it was a really fun movie.
I had the same opinion that I had when I saw it originally. This is my second time seeing
right.
it. Originally, when I saw it in 2007 in theaters that I had run to. Mm-hmm. because I was so excited.
Out of
Danny
breath
Coyle.
Watching this
yeah,
movie.
Yeah, I was very sweaty. I was all horned up for the movie specifically. And Cillian Murphy. He's got beautiful eyes.
Oh, man.
Let's. By the way, we will take a second later to talk about how both Cillian Murphy and Chris Pine
yep.
are uglier.
Oh, Chris Evans.
Chris Evans, yeah. Yeah. Wrong Chris. But and Chris Evans are uglier in this movie than they normally are.
Yeah,
and
they wanted that, to.
True.
Which it seems scientifically accurate for space.
Yeah, yeah.
Anyway, but okay, my thought on this movie, yeah. before we get into anything science, is that 80% of it is a great movie.
Okay.
And then the last little bit.
So to be clear, we're talking about the first 80%.
Yeah.
Yeah. I'm on the same page.
The first 80% and then the dude shows up. Yeah. Then the I am the captain now. The old captain.
The old captain now.
The old captain in. Now comes in. And
yeah, that
really.
Was a popular opinion online as well. A lot of people had this issue with the third act of the film where it almost changes genre, I would say.
Absolutely.
It like suddenly becomes more of like a stalker horror yeah. film, right?
Yeah.
So I don't know. How do you did it turn you off of the movie? Because it seems like we all got a positive reaction from the film still. So
I still enjoy it, but I agree that, I mean, I kind of, at this point, I manage expectations, right? Where I'm like, I know the last part's going to be like, all right, well,
yeah,
that happens.
You know what bothered me? This is like a really weird particular thing maybe, but he started doing those like out of focus shots a lot towards yeah. the end there. And I honestly, I would maybe
because
feel...
Because you lose focus in space.
Right, when you get
gravity
close to the sun.
With that. That's
oh,
right.
So, yeah, so yeah, there are some yeah. signs there.
Bam. See?
Official NASA representative, Brad Solnitzer. Yeah, I thought on it, I would be down with the whole like horror stalking guy chase thing if I could see most of it. But I just felt like I was dizzy or like nauseous watching some of it because it was like out of focus and like all these weird angles and stuff. So that I don't know. It kind of took me out of it, I guess.
There were some weird, I mean, there's. I thought they worked, but some of them were definitely weird choices like that when they first... Enter Icarus One, the flashing like
right.
that, the faces of
that
the
thing. I dug honestly. I
was like, whoa, oh, what just happened? The first time you see it, you're like, what just happened? Like, was that
intentional?
Yeah, that's right. Absolutely.
Yeah, exactly. So, it's like the dicks in Fight Club. Yeah.
Yes. Yeah. I honestly love that stuff.
He Fight Club dicked us, but with people who had previously died that we hadn't met yet.
Yeah, and then he just kept Fight Clubbing us until we really got it.
Yeah. Now, do we assume people listening to the podcast have seen the movie? This
yes.
very unpopular movie.
Yeah, I think. Well, first of all, let me say, obviously, we're giving away some stuff already, but you should go watch this movie. I would recommend it.
Yeah.
It sounds like you guys recommend it, too.
Absolutely.
It's a fun sci-fi movie. All the acting was great. Obviously, we all have some issues with it. Seems like yeah. all the same part. Mm-hmm. But, yeah, go watch
NASA
it.
Two official NASA thumbs up.
Two official NASA thumbs up and one schmuck thumbs up.
Can we do a plot review?
A plot review. Yeah. Okay, so the sun, it's not that the sun is dying. I look this up and I have
no,
something
the sun,
about
they literally, don't they literally say yeah, in the open monologue, the sun is dying?
Yeah.
What do you mean it's not that the sun
fact,
is dying?
It does so, a very nice fade from the Fox logo into
the
dying
sun.
Which
that's true. Okay.
It's implied at the start of the movie is right that the sun's intensity is much lower than
yeah, it's dying.
Needed for Earth to that it's dying.
It's fucking
right.
dying.
It's fucking dying and that's all that there is to it.
Right.
Okay.
The sun's on its deathbed.
So wait, so it is. So it like it's gonna burn it, cooler or something. It's gonna burn
that's
less.
The impression that I got.
Will...
I mean, well, okay. So what you're sort of effectively retconning for those of us who watch the movie because that's definitely not in the movie,
right? No,
is right. This implication that this stellar bomb that they have to deliver mm-hmm. to the sun will break up this whatever cue ball,
right?
And
right.
allow the sun to resume its normal rate of. I'm assuming fusion, is that
sure.
right?
Sure, yeah, I think that makes sense.
Yeah.
But, so, okay,
the,
wait.
Here's the plot of the movie. Here's the plot of the movie.
Go ahead,
Brad. The plot of the movie is that the sun's dying.
Yep.
So they send scientists to save the sun.
The second
yes.
round
the
of scientists.
Yeah, this the first round of scientists
we've already, yeah,
didn't
we've already
make
it. Made it to a certain
so
point.
So they
yeah.
mine
right.
Earth for all of the leftover matter that could possibly make this bomb mm-hmm. that could reignite the sun.
Yep.
They made it very clear this is their last chance.
Yep.
And these guys go off to space to
reignite the sun.
To reignite the sun to save the human
yes.
race.
Which sounds like when you explain the plot like that, which is incredibly accurate, great job, Brad, it's going to be this like action-packed film, like a classic sci-fi, I don't know
like
what Armageddon,
core.
The core, right.
Sure,
but
classic.
It's really not that. It's really this like much more like delicate, I don't know, like suspenseful acting foray into space, which I really liked. You know, a lot of these movies, it's just, you know, what happens wrong next, you know, and it's just a bunch of things that they're trying to fix or save or whatever. And there are a few things, but in general, it's like a slow-moving, patient film, which I really dug.
But they do keep the suspense high from the beginning.
Yes.
They all somehow fall in love with the sun. That happens. They all love... There's that one guy who just, like, loves...
Some more than others, for sure. Yeah. They
is
look
that
at
scientifically
the,
accurate?
There's a falling in love with the sun?
If you get close to the
I'm
sun,
not a psychologist.
Fall in love with it?
But I could see it being... I mean, right, it's been worshipped as a... Right? I mean, deity
Absolutely.
In the past. So I guess it does make some sense that some people would be susceptible to that.
Yeah.
Kind of.
What about you personally? You like?
Do I worship the sun?
Yeah.
I have not partaken in any sun worshiping.
No. You never sacrificed someone to keep.
I mean,
the sun
I enjoy
burning?
Like equinox. I'm like, that's kind of cool. Yeah. Like, you know, the axial tilt of the Earth is neat. But
yeah, when I was in this is how dumb I am, Mr. Scientist. When I was in elementary school, I was the kid who got in trouble during the eclipse for looking at the sun.
Oh no!
They wouldn't let me out for the next eclipse. I had to be kept inside.
Listeners, you should know he's wearing glasses and maybe correlated.
Yeah. I started taking the glasses. Yeah. Okay. The glasses. This is all fashion. There's not even glass. Oh no. There is.
I forgot. Okay, there was actually a few scenes where they're looking at the sun and like messing with the percentage of sunlight that they're allowing inside. So I wanted your take on that because it's like the first scene in the movie. What's his name? Cero or something like
yeah,
that?
Yeah, Cero. The sun lover.
Cero.
Yeah, sun lover is more, for me, memorable name for him. So he's in there and he's
Sounds
saying...
Sounds very edible though.
Yeah, that's true.
Oh.
Sorry.
Yeah, no. Yeah.
Different
good
type
catch,
of sun.
Good catch.
So he's in there, he's looking out and he's saying like Icarus, he talks to the ship is called Icarus. He said, Icarus, let me put the sun at like 4%. And she says like 4% will be irreversible damage, but you can do 3.1% for 30 seconds.
Right.
And so he does that and it's like a really intense scene. And so I just wanted your like take on like, how would that affect us if we were to take in parts?
I mean, I certainly can't speak to like the physical damage that of course that would happen to your retinas and everything. That's what they warned in that movie. Mm-hmm. I suspect mostly what struck me in that scene was it was a weird thing to put a window in a spaceship that has to mostly block the sun, right? Like,
right.
Oh, we're going to put this one point where sun can get in.
Yeah. Yes. And it's a whole room dedicated just to that. There's nothing else in the fucking room, right?
I thought that was a surprise because, you know, like for most of the things that you need to block sun, like heavy quartz glass or whatever, right, to like essentially not let that much heat in.
Yeah.
It was a choice. But I guess, I mean, it's a movie choice, not a...
Right.
It doesn't have to be practical. But I don't know. I mean, I'm assuming that they just had some ability, like a... pixels or whatever, right, to block more or less of the sun.
I loved the optics of it and I could see why they use it as a plot device in the film, but I couldn't help but think logically, like, why would you design a spaceship with this room that's just to look out upon the sun, which you're not supposed to look at?
I would assume that there's like maybe just the human element, right?
Yeah.
But, you know, I mean, so there's a right, of course, we do fly airplanes largely on sensor data today, but you still have a cockpit for people to look out in the small window. So it's not that, you know, there are, I guess, analogs even in the world today that kind of would imply that maybe you do need a windowed room, but it wasn't a control room. It wasn't something where you're like, I'm going to joystick from this room in case, you know, I don't know, we're coming up on the sun and I realize that we're not over the coronal spot that I need to drop this stellar bomb. It was just sort of like it felt very much like a... Go and look at the sun room.
Yeah, which I think is nice.
It was nice.
It's a nice touch.
It was nice. It was second place for me to my favorite room, which was the Earth VR room.
Yeah.
I don't know.
Oh,
what
yeah,
to
that
call
was
it.
The psych room. Yeah,
yeah, that I thought was great.
Yeah, they had a room where the psychiatric professional was he a psychiatrist? Or
yeah,
the
craziest guy.
Yeah,
by the way,
the craziest guy on the ship. Classic literary move, making the psych guy the crazy guy.
Yeah,
but there's this room that you could be prescribed in order to, you know, level yourself out.
Right.
And it was a room that was a VR room where you could just experience Earth things.
Yes.
But
yes.
It was weird because you're absolutely right, right? It was prescribed, but I was like, why wouldn't you just go there? Like, why wouldn't you have an hour in there every day? Do you know what I mean?
Like,
why is it like
thing.
Your punishment is you spend an hour in this beautiful place that can simulate forests?
Yeah.
And
it was also a little on the nose. It's like, oh, people are losing their humanity. Let's prescribe them literal humanity.
Yeah.
Yeah.
To remind them, though, I did like it though. Also, I was imagining watching porn in that room. Oh. Anybody else?
Did not cross my mind.
Yeah. Okay, yeah, no, mine either. Just kidding.
You read that from some anonymous blogger.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. No, but it would, I feel like, reinforce people to get into fights, because why would you not want to spend time in that room? It's so cool. It reminds you of Earth. It's like, well, if I punch this guy in the face, I get 2 hours in the room.
In the Earth room, watching waves hit
women. Boat. Yeah, waves hitting women. pretty misogynistic film.
That was
if you think about it. Okay, so I have so many, by the way, like random things that I wrote down.
I have a question.
Yeah,
can I ask
go.
A science
anytime,
question?
Anytime.
Did
yes.
this spaceship need? Was there any good reason why this ship needed to be manned? Because if you get something on basically the correct trajectory in space, won't it just keep going in that direction unless something physically hits it?
So okay, there is a trick. You cannot really point things at the sun and just shoot, right? Just because of orbital mechanics.
Orbital mechanics. We were talking about that the other day.
We don't have to. No, we don't have to go over basic orbital mechanics for anybody here. I think that the truth is, as much as, and obviously had a very intelligent computer system, but so much of that kind of stuff does require, like, you see them actually doing a little bit of maintenance work, mm-hmm. right? So even if you could automate a fair amount of it, but I think there's always that room for error. And like, did you design all the right systems correctly? And do you not want some logic in the loop, some ability to override? Although, again, the computer does take over many times, which, and that's a balance we play in real spaceflight as well. Like, what's the balance between trusting humans to do a job versus an automated system that can make reactions in, microseconds, not seconds? Mm-hmm. So I think it did make sense if this is your last or, your only two opportunities to restart the sun, that you would want a largely automated system, but you would want humans still present there, I think.
Yeah.
Well, that was a big question in the movie, though, was how much do you trust human intuition, human intelligence, human decision-making versus the intelligence of a computer, right? Mm-hmm. Because they had to decide whether or not they were going to. So a big plot point in the movie, for those of you who maybe haven't seen it, or those who need a little reminder, is that when they're on their way, they're going to make it to the sun, they have everything they need, but they have a chance to go on to Icarus One, the spaceship that had not previously made it,
mm-hmm.
right? For whatever reason, they see that ship and they have a chance to go potentially get a second payload.
Right.
And but that's a big thing. It's like, do you do it or do you not?
Yeah.
And that's the kind of question you cannot trust an automated system, right, to do. It would be very hard to program on the fly. So that's the inherent weakness, of course, of highly automated systems is they are not really dynamic, meaning that you program to do a job and if your programming was wrong or you need to adjust it entirely, like let's go to a different place, it's non-trivial, whereas a human can maybe at some risk, and in fact the movie shows that they made mistakes in the calculations, but right, I mean that they could make that adjustment in real time.
Yeah, so how would you because they didn't really explain how they were approaching the sun.
Mm-hmm.
So you were talking about orbital mechanics, which obviously we know all about.
Right.
But just in case.
Case, like for some reason I have never heard that word before.
Yeah, let's say theoretically an 11-year-old is listening to this mm-hmm. who doesn't know about orbital mechanics.
Right.
How would you approach the sun? How do you design that route?
So there's a great example of it now with Parker Solar Probe, which is this mission that is investigating the sun. And you have to remember when you leave Earth, you're sort of going in the same direction as Earth, right? So Earth has a momentum, and of course you leave Earth and you're going to go in a circle around the sun. So you can't just turn and start aiming inwards because your momentum is actually going to carry you out right in the same path, and then the gravity that's also pulling you in from the sun is going to curve your thing, so you basically do a circle around the sun. So what you want to do is actually slow down a little bit, and as you slow down, what you're doing is you're still going in the same direction as Earth, but the gravity, right, if you think of the two angles, a right angle, one going straight out and one going towards the sun, now the size that's pulling you in is a little bit more than the one that's kind of keeping you going straight in a circle or straight slash in a circle. And so you start falling in towards the sun. Mm-hmm. And so the more you can slow down, the more you can sort of fall in towards the sun. And that's kind of the way you would do it, right? Like trying to aim straight towards the sun would actually just require a tremendous amount of fuel. Mm-hmm. But if you basically just decelerate and slow down, which is effectively what Parker Solar Probe did, is it left the Earth, and then of course now it's doing flybys of Venus and and to slow down more. But it basically is just trying to lose energy so it keeps falling in towards the sun. Cool. And so you're going to kind of end up at some level looking like you're traveling as a, you know, as a circle going from the big circle of Earth towards a very small circle kind of right at the sun.
And this Parker Solar Probe?
Mm-hmm, Parker Solar Probe.
This is a recent, I have not heard of this.
Yeah, it launched last year.
Okay.
And it's going to be going on, I think, till 2025. But each time it gets a little closer to the sun. Its final, I think, approach to the sun is about 4.5 solar radii from the surface. Oh, sorry, 4.5 solar diameters from the surface.
Whoa.
So, right, if you imagine the sun, and what you'll do is you could imagine it's only going to be 4.5 suns away from the surface of the sun. It's well into the area, of course, where the sun's influence is dominant, the corona, but it's...
And it's going to measure solar winds, flares?
That's right. So actually Parker, Eugene Parker, is the person who coined the term solar winds.
Oh, okay.
And so it was named after him. Cool. He's still alive. He was there at the launch. Mm. But yeah, so it measures all these sort of effects that are going on with this all these properties of the corona and the solar magnetic fields and everything else. And the idea is to understand, you know, how to model that better. And it helps us here on Earth, of course, because we still see some of the impacts of it. Satellites that are right subject to these solar flares and things like that. But it's you know, intent is initially scientific, and then of course we'll learn how to take that science and apply it to like things that we do here.
Nice.
But yeah, so they have since we're on the subject, very similar to the Sunshine spacecraft, right? You have this big shield. Mm-hmm. In their case, it's reflective with a more of a white surface.
Okay.
There's like a carbon shield between those. Like, I think, I can't remember how many feet of carbon there is. And that's keeping, right, the sun, the surface there is, you know, going to get to, I think, thousands of degrees, but the backside stays, you know, in the high double digits. So you can keep your electronics nice and relatively cool, but you know, you're rejecting most of the heat from the front. So very similar to the Sunshine spacecraft.
That's incredible. So that was going to be one of my main questions. Yeah. It's like, how does certain material react to being close to the sun?
Yeah.
Because it seems, you know, I was watching just thinking like, well, any material is going to just burn up. I mean, I don't know what Venus and Mercury are made of. I'm sure you do.
Rocks.
But a bunch of rocks.
Yeah.
So I guess it's like, oh, do we
yeah,
just...
that was my leading theory too, was rocks.
Rocks, yeah. So we are similar. So yeah, I guess we have certain stuff that this shield is made of that can get really close.
Yeah, so here's the thing about when you're in space, you have to remember you're not in an oven, right? There's not air all around you that's superheated and therefore warming you from all sides.
Okay.
What you're seeing is like, if you imagine standing next to a fire, right? And like, you go to have a bonfire or whatever, you feel that kind of that warmth on the side of the fire. Mm-hmm. So most of the heat is shooting straight out the top, mm-hmm. but some of it is sort of radiating towards you on the side, right? You feel like your pants get warm or whatever.
Yeah.
And the same thing is happening in space. So because there's not really atmosphere out there, the side that's facing the sun is getting pretty warm, and the side that's facing the black of space is actually getting pretty cold.
Oh.
And so you play this trick of trying to manage it so that you don't heat up too much on one side. Even in Earth orbit, you already have that issue. So for astronauts, right, they have to be afraid. They have, you know, to be afraid of sitting in the sun for too long, or they need air conditioning units, right? Conversely, if you're in the shade, you then need to make sure that, well, your body will do a pretty good job of keeping you warm for a while at least. But you have this thermal management. So you'll see radiators on the back sides of spacecraft. So they'll get hot on one side, or they have computers, and these radiators on the back are actually just trying to dump heat out towards the black of space.
Wow.
And so the same thing, you know, the Parker Solar Probe or the two Icarus vehicles, you'd have a front side that's getting very hot, but for the most part, it's not really transferring heat backwards. So it's just like, think of it as a big shade, right?
Right.
And then if you paint the back of that black as opposed to, you know, silver on the front, the black can radiate heat towards just the big darkness of space. But it's a balancing act.
So that stuff was realistic when they were outside of the spacecraft and they were fixing panels or something?
So, yeah, the only part that I couldn't quite understand is why you would put all these panels in. And my guess was they thought that if you could, you know, and I'd have to really think about this, you know, like, what would I do if I were to design the spacecraft? And my guess is that if you can kind of angle the panels to be more flat on sun, you have these ability to sort of shoot now loose heat out of the side of the, right, underneath the panels.
Uh-huh.
Otherwise, I would just, you know, the way we would normally do this is just build a single solid object that's that big.
Uh-huh.
No moving parts, because moving parts can fail. That's always your, and in fact, they do. So why introduce this potential failure that doesn't need to exist?
Which
unless
then failed.
That's right. Absolutely.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But the movie does a good job. I actually was fairly impressed with how often they approach possible failure scenarios and actually have thought about it, right? It doesn't just sort of skip over. It doesn't sort of treat them as, don't worry, some, you know, magic happens and fixes it. It seemed like they were thought out.
Yeah. I mean, that's good to hear you say that.
Can I ask you in general how you felt about the science of the movie? Like, because I imagine as the level of science that you are and the type of science that you do, that you watch a space movie and often, like, how does this compare to other ones? And does it normally drive you crazy?
It's a hit or miss. I think, you know, if movies aren't internally consistent, I'm actually pretty good with them. So, like, the Star Trek, Star Wars stuff, usually fine with, because I sort of accept the rules that they're going to establish. Occasionally they'll just introduce new devices to save the day or to cause a problem, and that usually causes more of an issue than, you know, getting science wrong. I don't expect every movie, like, I like sounds in space, right? It's kind of, it would be really boring if everything was just absolutely silent the whole time.
Yeah, I was thinking about the sound in this movie.
But, you know, like Gravity, for example, as flawed as that movie was, did a great job of doing sound design with, you know, when you exited an air, you know, hatch or whatever, all of a sudden just go very quiet, which it was very powerful in that regard.
Yeah,
doing it. So there's cool ways to, you know, to use the science to your advantage.
Yeah.
But yeah, I want to hear lasers go like pew pew in space. I don't want to be like, oh, it's just like the lights shining on each other. Like, that's not very exciting.
Yeah. No, the sound design. I liked a lot of the sounds in the movie, actually. Yeah. They were, like, intense.
So this movie didn't bother me. I can't speak to the psychology of what happens to people in, you know, prolonged small groups and, you know, things like that. So that part, didn't bother me as much. Mm-hmm. Otherwise, I thought the movie did a lot right. I was actually watching it sort of with that critique in mind, specifically for today, I was like, I'm pretty impressed. They seem to, nice. To know what they were doing more often and didn't really introduce too much just for the sake of plot or story.
That's good.
Yeah.
What about the part where Chris Evans,
yes, that's the right Chris. Good. Yeah.
I got the right Yeah. Is like they propel them from one spaceship to the other.
Oh yeah,
spacecraft to the other by opening the door, and then he's only wrapped in insulation.
Yeah, I mean, if it's a short term, right? You have, so when you think about when you open these doors, you're not getting sucked out as much as the air behind you is sort of just going to push you out, right?
Yeah. Mm.
And so you're effectively getting like a big spring push, and if you can aim it well, you can get to the right place. And if it's a very short term, right, you're not going to freeze to death or die. You probably end up with a lot of the same issues that, like, people coming out of rising too quickly,
like
while
the
they scuba the bends, right? Mm. You probably end up with more issues like that than you do with, I'm gonna have partially frozen limbs and things like that, because it's a short period, right? Your skin will maybe freeze at the surface, but below
it's
that surface,
very bad frostbite.
Yeah, but I mean, it's going to be surface, and as quickly as that freezes, unless it prolongs, it's not going to keep freezing lower and lower, deeper into the tissue.
Like what happened to Harvey, who basically got frozen solid, and then, like, it seemed like 15, 20 seconds later, hit that pole and then just shattered to pieces.
And just for fun, we're just going to shatter him.
Yeah, I don't know. I always feel like I should at some point think about the math, and I don't know how quickly people freeze and, like, how long some of these things take. I know that movies obviously take liberties with that kind of stuff.
Yeah, and that part I don't think should be, like, I don't get mad.
No.
If I'm watching a movie about a stand-up comic and they make it 6 months before they're supposed to, like, time doesn't affect, me in movies, I don't care about time.
Yeah. And it was just fun.
Except in what's the Lady Gaga one?
Star is Born.
Star is Born really bugged me.
I haven't seen it.
I haven't seen it either.
There's a very quick ascent at a certain point. I'm just like, I don't believe it.
I don't buy it. It takes years to develop your voice.
As an artist.
The other thing that bothered me, I was curious on your take, was that in there, space suits, those big gold domey looking space suits, they had a very thin line of vision.
Yeah.
How'd you feel about that?
I thought that actually made some sense, right? Okay. I mean, you'll need some visuals to operate and to work outside the spacecraft.
Yep.
And I'm, you know, my guess is always that whatever heat and things you're letting in through glass or in this, I'm assuming quartz or whatever material they made that kind of that eyepiece out of, it has to be pretty minimal, right? Like, you can't afford a lot of heat because you're trying to keep yourself actively cool, right? I mean, they're sweating profusely inside there. You see them taking sips of water.
Right.
So I'm guessing that, you know, you can't make a great body because you're going to start heating up. There's no way for you to lose heat that fast because there's no way for, you know, as I turn my body, I can't radiate heat constantly. So that looked like a very short-term solution, but assuming they had to go out and quickly work on something, at least it gives them some hand-eye coordination. I don't know, maybe with training I could use, like, if someone just put a camera thing in front of me, I could operate
That's
my own
tough,
hands.
Though.
Yeah.
But it's a possibility. I mean, you could have put, but cameras still need some glass, right? So why introduce that one extra thing that could fail?
I was thinking about the sunroom when they have all this glass. Yeah. I just thought, like, oh, why not make that same material into most of their face?
Yeah, thing? I would have to assume that sunroom has, like, you know, either, again, we're sort of retconning at this point, but maybe some power demand to filter that much sun, right? And a way that as you absorb that extra heat from the sun, you have a way of dissipating it somewhere else, right? Which the spacecraft would have, but a small, you know, relatively small suit won't have.
And we're definitely, like, in this movie, taking a few leaps that basically, like, Tony Stark exists and has created this Icarus computer program.
I mean, but let's if you were the last option of Earth, you don't think that humanity could, I think humanity would bond 100% to make something like this happen.
Yeah.
So that's the optimism, you know, of
this
movie.
But I'm talking
about
just the Icarus program.
Yes.
Like that level of artificial intelligence in a computer program that can communicate with humans so efficiently.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Like, so what I'm saying is you believe that that exists, but like the second you put that same technology into the suit, you're basically just watching Iron Man.
Yeah.
What I'm saying.
True.
Right. Yeah. That's fair.
Yeah.
Although I will say that whole AI thing, when he's like realizing, he's like talking to Icarus and she's telling him like there's a fifth person on board.
Oh, that was great.
That was a great moment, but why wait to tell him that until that moment? I feel like as soon as you recognize as a computer that there's an unknown person aboard this ship, wouldn't you tell everybody?
Did the computer know who the people were on board?
Yeah.
Besides, from voice?
It said everybody, because in that moment, the computer named everybody and
said
one
unknown.
Unknown. And it was like, what? Wait a minute. Who is that?
But there wasn't any, I thought they did a good job because there wasn't any history in the movie of the computer just randomly being like, oh, and you should probably know this. It was only them asking the computer question.
Yeah, that happened. You're right. Another time when the fire was going down in the oxygen tank with the plants and stuff, the computer was very coy about the whole thing. It was telling them like oh, there you might have to, you know, maneuver this way. And they're like, what? Why? And they're like, oh, there's a huge fire going on. Yeah. Oxygen garden. Like, what? Start with that.
Oh, sorry, I'm a computer. I didn't think about you guys needing the oxygen.
Yeah, I guess, I mean, there definitely were some choices in how the AI sort of opted to share information. And I mean, that probably makes sense from a plot perspective to create some drama. But
I was going
to
say, the drama of it is great.
We tend, I mean, like, I, you know, thinking back to our experiences, and of course, we do have to build an autonomy to a lot of the spacecraft, particularly the robotic spacecraft, because they go so far that, you know, the time between communication starts, like, I mean, you see this in a little bit in the movie where they talk about how long the signal is going to take to get out because it's going to bounce off the moon or whatever, which is minutes. It's on the order of minutes from the sun. It's, you know, anywhere from, I guess, 8 minutes or so away. When you start going out to outer planets, you get longer things. So, but the spacecraft have to sort of take care of themselves for a little bit. But we also then get data on Earth and figure out what's going on. So the spacecraft tends to only tell us, like, you know, the high priority things, so where it's kind of like chatty, are really when things are going wrong.
Right.
So it does, you know, it does make sense on the one hand that it wouldn't constantly inform you of these low level issues like an extra person. But
look, there might be a murderer on board.
I mean,
also, I did see him detach the two ships from one another. Should I have told you that?
Yeah, exactly.
I don't know.
Maybe
good
you should
point.
Tell us that. He's maybe just killed two men, but whatever.
Also, he doesn't have skin anymore. That's kind of weird.
Oh, that was creepy. Yeah.
Not for me to judge, but also, speaking of the communication, there was a really funny, which I didn't even think about the first time I watched the movie, but when he's sending his message back home, like in the video recording center, the background is like this crazy green shit.
That felt so like dated.
It felt like the original like backgrounds when you could FaceTime people from your computer. Or like
The webcams.
I'm in space.
That's right.
Yeah. I'm in Hawaii.
Why wouldn't it just be like a gray background?
Why just not shoot the normal background, right? Like
so
of the
strange.
Ship. It was very
odd. If my friend went to space and sent me a message back, I would love to see the spaceship movie.
Right.
why would you think I would
want to? Seems like a joke. If you got that from your friend, you'd be like, okay, I get it. You're, you know, technologically advanced on a spaceship.
Right.
Get over it. Okay, so I there's so much here that I have. I have I don't know what that spacesuit would be made out of, that like gold material that's like protecting them from the heat. I guess that's what they were implying.
I got this. Rocks.
Rocks.
Am I right?
Totally.
Moving on.
Yeah, rock. No, I mean, so the reason you use gold or why the ship is gold, right, is you're trying to reflect light. So the main thing that you're really, once you start absorbing light, effectively, if you're a black surface versus a white surface, Once you start absorbing it, you have to then lose it to something else. So as much as you can reflect light, it's to your advantage. Mm-hmm. And so that's why you see these like reflective, or a lot of spacecraft are gold or have a silver, you know, blankets, or are painted white on one side. So things like that can help you avoid getting right to taking on the heat to begin with.
Okay.
So your first line of defense is effectively reflected away from you. And then the second line is once you're going to have to take some heat, then try to dump it somewhere like that's not seeing a hot, right? So effectively look at a cold thing to lose heat, but try to reflect back as much of a hot thing
that
as you can.
That makes sense, because it's like less effort if it just immediately reflects.
That's right, absolutely.
To find a mechanism to remove.
Yeah, I mean, right? Like, I mean, if you think about your warm, like, you know, car seat or whatever, on a day, I mean, it's the exact same thing, which is once it absorbs the heat, mm-hmm. it's going to get very warm. But if you put your sun shield up on your front window and it never sees direct sun, your seat's going to stay much colder, right? It's not the air in the car that's heating up the seat. It's actually the sun's light.
Yeah. So don't worry about it looking goofy, guys. Go out and get these reflective sun panels.
Okay. I mean, okay. So also, you know, those emergency blankets are the same thing, yeah, right? Yeah. Like those reflect, they're actually... Those emergency blankets are so thin, they're not actually protecting, they're not like your down jacket that's, you know, insulating you. They're only reflecting back the infrared from your body towards you.
Huh.
And so they're just bouncing, you know, kind of wavelengths back at you to keep you kind of warm, which is then better than, of course, you know, just touching the ground and losing all your heat immediately, right? So that's their motivation.
Hmm. Okay, that makes sense. All right, we're going to take a quick break and we'll be right back.
Hey everyone, this is Jesse David Fox, host of Good One, a podcast about jokes. I am proud to announce that I have personally won the Streaming Wars. And there's a new docu-special on Peacock based on our own Vulture podcast. Good One, a show about jokes, follows Mike Birbiglia as he develops new material, taking audiences through the process of transforming personal stories into stand-up. Featuring interviews with Mike's family and comedy colleagues like Seth Meyers, Hasan Minhaj, and Asko Akatsuka, Good One, a show about jokes, is streaming now only on Peacock.
The break is over. Here we go, back to the show about science.
There's a line he says that they're going towards the coronal hole in the south polar cap of the sun.
Yeah.
Keep talking dirty to me.
I'm interested in your coronal hole, Brad. did that make sense? Is that where you would throw a bomb?
I'm certainly not a solar expert. I do know that the sun, like us, has two poles and does have a magnetic field, and it very well may be that you know, there are areas in which it's easier, like you don't have less of a surface layer or something that could damage a bomb on the way in. But I'm not, that's beyond my area of expertise.
What is your area of expertise? Did you say this or did I?
No, I mean, I said he was a systems engineer.
That's... Yeah, so I work on spacecraft and the engineering side mostly. And the domain that I work on the most is actually fault protection and autonomy, which is how do we kind of imbue our spacecraft with the ability to take care of themselves autonomously do actions that are needed either to get back in touch with us, to let us do more of the fixing, or to establish kind of a safe state on board the spacecraft.
So it's like you're raising a child, and that child is like, and you want the child to be self-sufficient a little bit.
Yeah, exactly. Or in this case, I'd be the person working probably on the AI, right? Like I'd be the guy on Earth who's just like, okay, it needs to be able to think about if you tilt the angle this much, you're going to see damage. Therefore, don't let them tilt the angle that much.
Yeah.
Or, you know, if you have
or you'd
this,
be the guy being like, maybe these panels are a bad idea because they're going to involve potential human.
It's true though, right?
Yeah.
I mean, like that is exactly what my job is on real spacecraft, is to look at the parts and be like, well, you either want redundancy, like you want two layers, or you want to, you know, to double down on some of these things like computers, so that in case one fails, you got a backup.
Right, because the thing that was insane in that movie is like essentially the argument that they are making: if one of these hundreds of panels fails, we're fucked.
Right.
Right.
Sorry for cursing on your podcast.
No, I don't fucking care.
Yeah.
He's a bad boy. He's the bad boy of science
podcasting. No, I'm not.
but seriously, it felt like that felt like a thing that would not have been allowed to exist.
Right. And I mean, but to be right, the humans then chose, like, let's try to go for redundancy. Let's pick up Icarus 1 because it improves our odds of doing something. So you selectively make those choices, but you try to make choices that won't add more ways of failing, like moving parts.
Yeah. Well, do you, in some way then, do you empathize with the character? I know you're doing this here and like trying to create it before the spacecraft goes off, but there was the character who like made a miscalculation that then affected the whole mission, a lot of lives.
Sure, of course
I did. Do you have that fear?
Oh, I mean, a good chunk of my motivation, and that was the weird actually in the movie, that no one was double checking his, that nobody else on board was capable of like looking at his math and being like, oh,
right,
you made a mistake.
He double checked it and triple checked it himself.
I mean, that's not how it works here at least, but I get that they have fewer people and maybe they're all too busy. But I do sympathize, because at some level I do live in a fear that, and not just in my job, but any of the jobs that I've held over time working on spacecraft, that like it's going to be my mistake that somehow costs us, you know, the mission, right? That right. Like, and it's not, I don't have to worry about human lives. I don't have to worry about saving the planet in my case, but it's still, oh, I worked with hundreds of people for, and you know, I don't know, 8-10 years on this project. I don't want to be the one who ruins it for hundreds of people and, you know, maybe potentially like, right, we lose jobs or do other things too. So, but that's also why you have this double check and triple check externally, right? Like I do my, here's what my design should be. And someone's like, have you thought of this? And they should have been like, hey, did you think about, you know, the angle of approach to the sun and how that's going to change.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. But right. You have people checking your work. So
absolutely,
it shouldn't
right.
Yeah. Fall on you.
Yeah. It was also yourself. Weird to me that they just let him do it by himself. They were like, we're all going to go to bed. You go ahead and do this daring maneuver on your own. Right. Like, and then the alarms are like, oh, it went terribly wrong.
Yeah. Yeah.
And what? He just forgot.
Yeah. Yeah.
I forgot about the shield part.
I forgot. What do you want from me?
Yeah.
It's like, I don't know. Maybe to tell us you're doing it.
Yeah.
Like, did you not
maybe
tell
we
anyone?
Can just go through a checklist.
Yeah.
Together.
Yeah. Talk about it.
Yeah. I have a couple fun sun questions that I was hoping you would try and guess
okay.
The answers
yeah.
To.
Oh, wow. Oh, now I'm going to. I already told you guys I was dumb.
So let's prove it.
Okay.
So the sun alone contains what percentage of the total mass of the solar system?
Do you know the answer?
I actually don't. I have a guess.
Do you know the answer?
Okay. I have a guess, but
cool.
I'm gonna...
And let's both say our guesses on three.
No, Brad.
Okay. Wait, say it one more time.
The sun alone contains what percentage of the total mass of the solar system?
I don't even have a frame of reference.
Well, you know what the solar system is.
Like, okay, yes, I know what a solar system is.
What our solar system is.
Yes, it is.
The sun is how much of that...
Percentage.
Yes.
Of the mass.
Right.
A big percentage.
Sure.
I would say 60... 70, 80, 95%.
Bob Eggers is just going thumbs up. Go up.
No. He's obviously not signaling to me in any way.
No. Yeah, your eyes
okay,
closed.
I'm going 87%.
Okay, and...
I'm going to guess 98%.
Yeah, he's closer.
You said no when I said 96.
I said higher.
Yeah. It's 99.8%.
Okay. Oh, 99.8.
And you know what? There's no way to prove this.
it's immeasurable.
Yeah.
I thought that was a stunning fact. I couldn't believe that to be true.
So what you're talking about is if you took everything and you collapsed, right, just like you think of the atom with the electron mm-hmm. orbiting it, which is
which
wrong.
I think about all the
yeah,
time.
Yeah, obviously.
As a joke
but,
writer, this morning.
Yeah, I was like, oh, bore, you were so wrong. But if you collapsed essentially the entire solar system, it would basically be a very tiny ball and then the sun.
Right.
That makes a lot of sense.
Yeah.
Okay. I didn't think about the whole the mass part because I'm an idiot. Okay. So here's the other question for you, Brad. How many Earths can fit inside the sun?
Well, obviously it is infinite because
infinite.
Time is a construct and... We're all going to die someday, and I'm just going to die a little bit stupider than I wanted to, because I didn't read enough. Anyway.
You still got time.
Yeah, I can't read.
Oh.
I have my glasses off. Okay, how many Earths can fit inside the sun? Are we talking a million?
I'm not going to tell you any answers.
I'm going to say, well, with the information I just got, right?
That's a big clue, yeah.
99. I'm going to say...
Doing the math.
You can do some math. I mean... Yeah. I don't have my calculator with me.
Here, take
my phone on airplane mode. I'm going to say 500,000.
Okay.
Oh, that seems like a good guess. I'll go with a million.
A million is correct, yeah.
And you know what? I wanted to be half right. One half of one right.
I mean, order of magnitude, that's...
Yeah.
That's pretty, you're pretty close.
Brad, you did great. I think you just nailed it.
I think that was
100%.
Was 2 for 2.
Yeah, 2 for 2. It says here the sun is almost a perfect sphere and that it's the closest thing to a perfect sphere observed in nature. Did you know that?
I did not know that.
Oh,
yeah.
I didn't know that either. I mean, that's no surprise to anybody. But
no.
I found that fascinating. I thought that was really crazy and strange. And why are, like, not other planets perfect spheres, or are they weird shaped rocks?
I think most of, I mean, if you have enough gravity, you generally pull yourself into the shape of a sphere, right? So that's one of the defining characteristics of planets or larger bodies, is that like, a lot of the asteroid belt is just kind of chunks of rock. And then some of them, when they get enough mass, right, the gravity starts pulling all the things and it makes it kind of form into the ball shape.
Okay.
But it's imperfect. And I'm assuming that Sun, either because it's gaseous or just so massive that it really has the ability to overcome any sort of, you know, minor differences between the various areas of it and cause it to still be very spherical.
Okay. I also do feel like there's a fun fat joke somewhere in here.
Yeah.
I can't find it yet, but something about the mass and the sphere. Anyway,
we'll wait.
Give me a few days.
Yeah.
It takes a lot of, you know, I have to go through the whole process.
The sun is currently a yellow dwarf star. I was wondering if you knew the different qualifications that...
No, I mean, there's red dwarfs.
Right.
And yeah, then there's, there's larger stars. As far as I recall, our sun is like a fairly close to average star, but I don't know a lot of the details compared to the other stars and what makes them special.
That makes sense. I have a game here. Do you guys want to play a quick game?
Yeah.
I would love to.
Do we have time for that? I feel like there's a lot to talk about.
What if we both said no?
I'd be like, I get it. yeah, let's play a quick game, and then I want to talk a little bit about solar energy as well.
Ooh.
I don't know what you guys know about that. But this game is called Spot the Sun.
Spot, spot, spot the sun. Spot, spot the sun.
And it has nothing to do with science. So game is more for Brad.
once again.
It's about famous dads and famous sons of theirs.
Uh-huh.
So here we go. This is more of a speed game.
Okay,
so whoever
great.
Can say it faster will win each round. Okay?
Yes.
So I want you to name, just to be clear here, the father and the son.
Okay.
Mm. Okay? This son is taking after his pops with songs like Plastic and acting in films such as After Earth, The Karate Kid, and The Pursuit of Happiness.
Will Smith and Jaden Smith.
That is correct.
Oh, nice.
And
who's the genius now?
speaking of genius, have you seen Will Smith as the genie in the new trailer?
It's terrible.
Yes. Yes.
Okay, I won't comment.
It was a choice.
Why is his back so
strong,
ripped?
A strong choice.
Strong choice.
I was imagining the genie is gaseous, you know? He's like, why has he ever ripped back?
I don't know. It looked very
strange
to me.
He looked like he was face swapped in the original, like from the original.
You know what it really reminded me of? Do you remember like the mummy when they put the
rock's
face on the scorpion
yes.
thing?
Yes.
Yeah. That's kind of what the vibe I got.
And you know what? No one liked that.
No, it didn't.
Everyone
it didn't
made
work.
Fun of it. So shit move there. No offense, whoever made that. Okay. This talented Canadian played Dr. Jason Seaver on the sitcom Growing Pains, and his son sang the number one hit, Blurred Lines.
Alan Thicke and Robin Thicke.
The Thicke. You got it.
Yeah. Right. Okay. We're one and one.
I think you were just holding off, actually. You were like making eye contact with me, like, is he going to say it? That was very kind of you. Thank you.
Wow. What a friendly game here today. All right. This Brooklyn native is known for his role as Frank Costanza on Seinfeld, and his son's movies have grossed more than $2.6 billion.
Jerry Stiller and Ben Stiller.
That is correct.
I remember his name first.
This dad is nicknamed America's Dad and is mostly known for his role in Cloud Atlas, and his son was fantastic in the first season of Fargo.
Tom Hanks and Colin Hanks.
Yes, God, that is correct.
Colin
the
Hanks.
Hanks. Yeah.
The Hanksies.
The Hanksies, that's their known. okay, this son played his father in Straight Outta Compton.
Oh. The Cubes?
Yes.
The Cubes.
Yes. I'll take it.
Well played.
The Cubes. Ice Cube and what's this kid's name? O'Shea
Cube.
True. And O'Shea Cube Jr. Okay, last one. This singer-songwriter is known for classics such as Like a Rolling Stone and The Times They Are Changin', and his son is in a band.
Jacob Dylan and Bob Dylan.
Yes.
Oh, the Wallflowers.
The Wallflowers is the name of the band. Yeah. That's
one
correct.
Headlight. That was one of the first albums I ever bought.
Wow, really?
Yeah.
Great one. Won 2 Grammys from what I recall.
Wow.
So we've come a long way. All right.
Me and Cinderella.
Yeah.
Put it all together.
We'll do a cover that we can release during the credits of this podcast.
There'll be some extra,
extra bonus content
for anyone who supports on Patreon.
I just wanted to make a quick note here about the dust, which made me kind of paranoid. You know when they go into the Icarus One? And he said that it's like human skin is the dust. So that's pretty ridiculous. I was worried about that. But it says here that He says that 80% of the dust being human skin is an urban myth, and that common household dust on Earth is composed of many different things, and none of them individually account for anything close to 80%. And the whole crew there was dead, so that they wouldn't be making new skin cells.
Right.
So the dust.
Also, there felt like far more dust in volume than there would have been humans in volume. Like, there was not that much humans on board to create that much dust.
Yeah, like if you graded them.
If you graded them
with a grader, they would create one big pile of dust. It would be a pretty big pile of dust. Like
right. Yeah, one pile of
but
dust.
But not like not enough to cover rooms.
No. It was all over the place. Okay, so I wanted to ask also about the Ice Age and something called the Little Ice Age. Do you know about these
No,
two
I'm
things?
Not.
Okay, I don't know if it even relates to the sun burning less. Some people have claimed that there's like a correlation to periods of time where the sun isn't like burning as strong and that we feel the effects on Earth. I don't know. It's supposedly a debatable issue.
Okay.
But do you think then, I guess my question is like, was the Ice Age correlated to anything with the sun, or is that just like something the Earth was going
it
through?
It seems more unrelated? Likely to me that it's Earth related and not so much sun related, but
okay.
That's
like a climate change ordeal.
Yeah. Because I can't imagine the sun's variance is so great that the temperatures on Earth are going through that large a swing.
Got you. As we saw in the movie there towards the end where Sydney is all freezing.
Because, that's right. I mean, that makes more sense. Or Day After Tomorrow.
Yeah,
which,
right.
So, great movie. Perfectly accurate.
Fell in love with Emmy Rossum.
Sure.
She was in the Day After Tomorrow.
Yeah, no, she was. I mean, I understand.
Jake Gyllenhaal's love interest, and then she was on Shameless.
Mm-hmm. And you're still in love with her.
Still in love with her. Met her at a party once. She was not... She wasn't interested in talking to me.
It wasn't mutual. Is what you were saying.
Okay. I was like, you didn't see me around town?
Maybe she didn't know how you felt. Now she'll listen to the podcast and then she'll write you.
Dear Emmy.
Okay. Do you want to say something to her?
I love you.
I love you. Okay, so yeah, solar power is the most abundant energy source on Earth. And it says solar energy hitting the Earth. There's like enough of it every hour to meet all of humanity's power needs for an entire year. And so... we're moving towards solar energy.
Yeah.
Do you think we're moving there fast enough? Can we be doing more? Should more people get solar panels? What's your take on that?
I mean, I think we should definitely be striving for more. It is a free source of energy. I mean, panels, as great as they are, and I think that's the best solution we have today. They have their own inefficiencies. I mean, right, you're capturing, I think, 20-ish%, 25% of the actual power that's coming in from the sun. And they have, you know, manufacturing them isn't trivial. Mm-hmm. But that's, you know, I mean, in terms of what we're looking at compared to the other options that we're looking at on Earth, I think that's one of the best options we have.
Okay.
There's plenty of power. There's all these, you know, kind of wild schemes, of course, of like, could you beam power from orbit? Like create large orbital platforms to like reflect power into the things like that.
Okay, that's cool.
I mean, with you know, the movie specifically, of course, you have, you know, as you get closer, the intensity goes up. It's you know, it's proportional to the square of the distance. So going right twice as far from Earth means that you only get a quarter of the power, mm-hmm. and going a little, you know, halfway between Earth and the sun means, you know, you're getting four times the power. So it's, you know, if you think about like Icarus, they would have an abundance of solar power our context. But I mean, Earth-wise, it's, yeah, we get a lot. It's, I can't remember how many watts per square meter, but you can generate a fair amount of power. And you start seeing it. Like, I think when you fly across the country, you start seeing some of the cool solar facilities they're building up.
Yeah.
The concentrator ones always look a little scary, but cool to me, where they have all the mirrors point towards the center thing, and just like, we're just going to burn things.
Yeah.
Looks great.
We're just using it to cook.
Yeah.
I made one of those solar ovens when I was a kid. Do you guys ever build one of those?
No.
Like, you basically put a bunch of mirrors, you like aim it into a box, you try to insulate the box, and then you try to like, you know, basically you're just using
cook an egg or something.
Yeah. I mean, it took like 40 minutes to cook like one tiny thing in there, but
I mean, so cool.
Yeah. It's fun.
Just using the sun's rays.
Yeah, you can buy them on Amazon now too if you don't want to build your own. I think probably not very effective, but
just search that, guys, on Amazon, solar box or whatever.
I think it's like a solar oven.
Solar oven. Yeah. Right, that's what I meant.
Yeah,
For sure. So yeah, I mean, I read that there was like a disaster in Puerto Rico with the hurricane, and that Tesla went over there and they were able to like very quickly make solar power and you know, get energy and help a bunch of people like that. So I thought that was like fascinating, and that might be a solution for, you know, third world issues, that they can just harness solar energy.
No, it's a great, I mean, it makes one of the nice things about solar compared to, like, you can think about even the larger plants, and even if they're clean, right, they take a huge amount of infrastructure to build, like, a nuclear plant or, you know, even coal plants, everything. They're not, you can't do that on a micro scale. And the nice thing about solar is that you can put down a, you know, a panel and a battery and effectively immediately start powering. And then you have another one right next to it and you can get more power. And of course, the concentrators do require an actual commitment to have a center tower and a bunch of mirrors. But all the small ones, like you're talking about, you know, I can put it on my roof here. I can put it on top of a parking garage over there, right? It's really easy to do it at a small scale that's still pretty economical, especially as the cost of the other, you know, resources goes up. And so that, you're right, you can go to Puerto Rico and you can, as soon as you put the first one down, it's generating power at that moment, right? And you,
it's crazy.
Yeah.
So what's the, is, are there cons to solar energy? I mean, why not, you know, press the accelerator here?
I think that, you know, honestly, with almost all these technologies, at the end of the day, it's, is it cheaper? Does it become cheaper at some point than, you know, doing natural gas or coal or things like that?
Right? I read that it was very cheap.
It's so that is one of the reasons why you've seen an explosion of solar power, is because it's finally become cost competitive with those things, right? And if you incentivized it, right, as a government, you know, which we're starting to see some of.
Yes.
Then you really do bring it down into the same range as why not. It does, again, it does require an upfront cost compared to, like, someone like me who just, like, I just can pull a cable to my house versus I have to install a, you know, a 20K solar panel. It's still difficult to have that upfront money, but that's a great place for governments to be like, oh, we'll have, you know, solar loans.
Right.
And when you...
Which
you
there
know,
are a bunch.
Yeah, so that's right. So, I mean, that's the kind of thing that you can really bring it down. So, like, oh, okay, well, I'll pay off this loan because I'm going to be saving, you know, $20 a month on my electricity bill from doing this. So, yeah, I'm all
cool,
for
futuristic, moving it forward, progressive guy.
Yeah. And you see a lot of countries doing it.
Yeah, and I think it depends. Like, right now, it varies state by state, right? In the U.S., so certain states do have solar subsidies.
Right.
But it also, a lot of that has to do with states where there aren't as many vested oil interests and there aren't as many, like, if really a lot of this comes down to just who's giving money to who. And, it's all the economics behind it, right?
Right.
Well, California's leading the way. We are, like, heavily in front by any other state, which is very cool. But I think China is, like, putting the U.S. to shame as far as solar energy is concerned.
Well, one of the advantages of having essentially, a political system like that is that you can tell the whole country to do something, right? It's not really that much of a choice. The government says, we're going to do this across the board, and it gets done, which, I mean, I'm not advocating for that government system, but it certainly has its advantages. And I think we can do it in the United States too. Just got to convince people. I know California is, you know, trying to legislate more of it, and that has its own problems, of course, because, you know, if people are like, I want to buy my first house, but now they're like, well, all new houses have to have solar. That adds another 20K or 30K to the house. It's tough on you. Like, so you want to make sure that those rules don't make it such that it, you know, it's a insurmountable burden, or
because, like, the initial infrastructure costs of, like, adding all of that, and then there's, like, you know, if you just get a bunch of panels and it's like, and it's like individuals have them, then it's like, okay, then you need the place to store the power, and that's,
you need,
like,
the place to store
cost.
And it's actually can be a real challenge for you know, the large institutions, so like the PG&Es and all the, you know, the electric companies. They're not really, if everybody started generating their own power, right, they would go out of business very quickly, and they would not be able to provide the power for the people who could not afford solar. Mm-hmm. So there is what you have is a systems engineering problem, right? It's just look at the big system. You want to slowly move into the solar infrastructure, but in the meantime, since not everybody can come immediately to solar, you have to do something about the fact that we do have coal plants and we do have other, you know, power sources, and those are needed by still a large number of people. You can't just be like, sorry, you didn't move into the solar era with us. You don't have electricity at your home anymore. So it's going to be tough. And you can't just be like, oh, we're going to charge you 8 times as much for electricity, because that's also not very, it's not really the fair thing to do. Yeah.
Now I want to focus on the fact for a little bit that you are a communist, you said?
Yes.
Let's explore that. We're wrapping up here. I had one more thing that I thought was interesting and wanted your guys' thoughts on. So Cillian Murphy, who I adore and you mentioned earlier.
Beautiful blue eyes.
Beautiful man, has claimed that his involvement in Sunshine converted him from agnosticism to atheism. Went through all sorts of, like, underwater training and space training and stuff, which, like, I don't even know if it's really required.
And that made him an atheist?
On one hand, I feel like I just want to make the point of, like, sometimes it's cool when they make these actors do like really intense training that actual astronauts have to do. And sometimes, and in this movie in particular, I just felt like, I don't know if that's required. Do you really need to go through all these months of going up there and stuff? Do you think that that helped them in the film? And then my other question was just like, do you guys believe in God, the sun god? Do you, or were you watching
that
this?
That was my favorite line. My favorite line of the movie is, I've thought about this line hundreds of times since 2007, which is when the captain of Icarus One shows back up to murder everybody, and he looks at the guy and goes, I've been talking to God for 7 years.
Yeah. So, yeah, I don't know. Respond to whichever you want.
That movie, this movie in particular, Sunshine Rain, there's not actually a lot of scenes where they're in, you know, zero gravity or microgravity. Very rarely. Most of their scenes are essentially done in, you know, what looks like Earth normal gravity from the spinning part of the spacecraft. So it doesn't seem to add a lot of value. I can imagine for maybe a movie like A Gravity, right, where there's so much of it spent, that would be more worthwhile.
Yeah.
That being said, right, as a layperson, I imagine if I did go into acting, it would be really awesome, and I would be way more likely to do a movie if they told me I was going to be able to spend, you know, like a month of training in, you know, scuba whatever suits and like do all these things just because it sounds kind of cool.
Yeah, it does sound cool. And I like that, like, Cillian Murphy, they said, went and like hung out with physicists and I don't know, like a whole
But he also department. Seems like the kind who would want to, right? Yeah, like, right, he somehow right, seems right. like that thinking man who's like, I want to,
yeah, get, you know, in there.
I do think, like, conversely, okay, maybe it made him an atheist because it was so intense or whatever, or
I'm not
I don't
sure.
know
yeah.
why
yeah.
he became an atheist, but I do think that there is, but essentially what the movie is about, or like what also what Danny Boyle likes to do, because he also did this in 28 Days Later, is he takes a standard type of movie, whether it be a zombie movie or a space movie, and his major thing that he's looking at is how do these crazy circumstances affect humanity, right? And so I guess as like you would maybe want your artists or actors to go through that in order to like actually have an idea of how insane this undertaking would be.
Yeah,
right. That's
you know,
true.
And like what it would do to you physically, mentally, emotionally to one, go through all the physical stuff, but also be trapped in such a confined area and how does that... Because like some of the more interesting scenes were about the dude who, you know, became suicidal, or even them just fighting over not being able, like, you know, it's just those, the cascading mental breaks.
Yes.
I saw it the other day just in the, I was in the post office and one of their two computers went down and everybody started slowly losing their mind. And I was like, you know what? I'm Cillian Murphy.
I'm going to stay chill.
I should be in the movie because I've seen, but you see all these like little moments of humanity and that's like kind of a lot of, like what the movie's about.
It's actually a really good point. It sort of ties it back into the initial. It's not a traditional sci-fi action movie in any way. It's really, you're absolutely right. It's a case study of humanity, and like that's, I mean, again, it's an impressive, you know, array of actors who are all very talented, and you're really watching this human drama unfold, right, on a remote spaceship. But it could have been virtually anywhere to have the same, you know, effect, right? It could have been in underwater, you know, research station, or it could have been anything. It's just, you needed that sense of isolation.
They shoot a bomb into the heart of Poseidon.
Right. I mean, but that's the thing, right? Like, anything that just didn't allow them to talk to home.
No, but seriously.
Would have worked. And it's, and so that's kind of, but it, you're right. It's absolutely, it's a study of humanity.
Even the way that they shot them inside of the spacesuits, like they had this like low angle, but you could, and them covered in sweat.
Yeah.
You're like, oh, okay. So here's the way, like the science of the situation, like the sweating and like the physical constraints of being in space would affect your, mentality.
And those shots with them in this are very like, they do make you feel claustrophobic and uncomfortable and hot along with, you know, the scene and everything else, right? They really give you that sense.
Yeah.
So there were some of the, some of the camera work was a little weird, but that some of those choices are really dead on and for conveying the emotion, I think.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah. It's so fun. I mean, even just the monologue that the former captain does about like what his life has been like there, it like literally makes, you want it to be something kind of profound.
I know.
But I think it's like maybe the point is just that you lose your mind if you're in space by yourself for a while staring at the sun.
That dude was losing his crap. But weirdly was strong, but then when they touch him, he's very sensitive because he's all burned up.
Yeah.
And there was kind of a
confusing... literally ripped his arm off.
Yeah, ripped his arm off.
It was just like, what? Why?
Okay, we're running out of time, but before we wrap it up, you guys have something you'd like to promote, tell people about?
As the official NASA guy here, I'd like to promote space and learning.
Oh, that's nice.
Brad Sonitz are here. I work at NASA.
Sounds so official.
No, I have nothing. Watch me do stand-up sometime. Come to a live show.
There you go.
In April, my Fast and the Furious musical will be premiering.
Wait, are you kidding me?
I'm writing a Fast and the Furious musical right
you
now.
Absolutely need to invite me. I will tell you this. I have watched, one, these movies many times. But two, we really were going through a period where we would have these telecons late at night with our partners. Overseas, and we would just watch the Fast and Furious movies before each telecom. We're like, what do you do between like 6 p.m. and 8 p.m. if you're going to be stuck at work? Mm-hmm. So I'm 100% in.
It would be crazy if all these scientists came to my Fast and the Furious musical.
Oh, I think there's going to be a lot.
A dream.
I think there's going to be
make
a lot.
It happen. Where's the musical?
Where we haven't decided where we're putting it up yet. I just would guess it's
where
April.
Where can people find out about where it's going to be?
That's a really good question. My Instagram, at Brad Lives Dreams.
Brad Lives Dreams.
Yeah, at Brad Lives Dreams on Instagram. Come see me do stand-up. Come see my show, Brouhaha, the comedy show, Drinking Game.
Yep. Brilliant show.
Yeah, any of that.
Great.
Mostly, I just want you to support my friend Ethan. He's not doing well right now.
I'm in a rough spot, and I'm glad you said something. No, lovely to have you, Brad. And I've seen Brad many times. A fantastic show. I'm sure this musical is going to be great. I've seen a couple of those tunes also, and it's so fantastic. You're going
to
love it.
I'm excited, honestly. Like I'm legitimately looking forward to April now.
Yes. Yeah. April's
going
to be good.
Yeah, it better happen, though. Seriously.
April. Oh, it's going to happen.
Okay, good.
It's going down.
Just kidding.
Where can people find out about you?
I'm Tweets Out Loud on Twitter and Instagram. It's a great name, I think. Honestly.
Yep, Tweets Out Loud.
Yeah, all one word.
So wait, your Tweets Out Loud on Instagram also?
Yeah, because I was lazy. I was like, well, why have two different names? It doesn't make any sense on Instagram, so that's even better.
Great.
It's just a long con. and then honestly, I will, despite not, of course, officially representing NASA the way that Brad does, I encourage you to check out the NASA.gov website. There's all sorts of cool things going on. This is, in my mind, the golden era of space. I always grew up thinking like Apollo was the best and we were done. And now I'm just like, we got robots at different planets. We got a robot, going towards the sun.
Yeah.
It's just an awesome time to do it. And NASA's been really phenomenal about putting all the pictures and data up on the internet and kind of almost, real time.
Nice.
So it's a fun way to participate and just, you don't have to know the science too. We'll bring you along, but just enjoy the ride. It's pretty cool.
Great.
That's awesome.
Love it. Our EP, of course, Brett Kushner, has also brought up a very interesting fact, which is that in what year was this?
2012.
You were caught on camera, I believe, right? Mm-hmm. It was part of a launch?
Part of the Curiosity rover landing.
Yeah. And you became sort of like a meme.
Meme is the right word.
Okay. Yeah, you became a bit of a meme.
Yeah.
and Obama even commented, and it was actually a very, from what I understand, complimentary thing, because he was saying that NASA is now like very modern and very cool, and it's not just a bunch of like white guys in glasses anymore. That you got this cool mohawk guy, and he was referring to you because you had a mohawk, because you do like a different hairstyle for a bunch of different reasons.
Yeah, so throughout the life of Curiosity, I had a mohawk for most of it. But I would like shave different things in the side of my head based on what was going on. So when we started doing our first big tests, it's all here on Earth, but just kind of preparing ourselves for the launch and subsequent landing, I would start shaving and like it's, system test 2, and I'd put like ST2 on the side of my head. And then for launch, I had my hair look like, it was red to orange to sort of look like a rocket,
That's fun.
Yeah, that is cool.
So but it was a fun thing. And then, The good news about being on a project for so long and having such a good relationship with everybody was that my boss actually sent out an email just prior to landing of what my hair should look like. And so the options were to shave it, of course. I think red for Mars and a red, white, and blue. And so with the winning vote was the red, white, and blue. So I had the little white stars on the side of my head and red and blue in the mohawk itself.
That's awesome. Nice.
And so now you still go get lunch with Obama all the time?
All the time.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's great. We just hop on the jet.
Obama actually now cuts his hair.
That's awesome.
No, but it's really cool. And to that point, I think it's been really neat because even in his post-presidential career, right, with the opportunity after 15 years, finally kind of being finished, he still was excited to tweet and, be like, don't be sad. This is let's celebrate the amazing accomplishments in science that were done in this 15 years. So
absolutely.
But it was really great to, I think, have that experience with such a science positive president.
Yeah. Just like this new one. All right.
Just ends with very sad music.
Okay. Thank you guys so much. I had fun. Hope you did. And yes. See you next time.
Yay.
Yay.
Thanks. Bad Science is hosted and produced by me, Ethan Edinburgh. Our social media producers are Kate Baker and EJ Gullett. And the Icarus-tive producer is Brett Kushner. If you'd be so kind to leave us an iTunes review, we'd very much appreciate it. And of course, follow us on Instagram at Bad Science Show. That's at Bad Science Show. And if you want to write us an email, you can do that as well. We try to respond to every email. That's badscience@seeker.com, badscience@seeker.com. And we'll see you next week, where we will be talking about Star Trek II: The Wrath of Khan. See you then. Bye.